Eve Engler, and he's going to bring democracy to the NDP, or he's going to try. At least he's running for the leadership of the vacant party at the federal level. And everybody that listens to the show knows Eve. Thanks again, Greg. Till the next time, eh?
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
I ain't saying he's a gold digger, but he ain't messing with no broke niggas. I ain't saying he a gold digger, but he ain't messing with no broke niggas. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people.
Hurricane came through, fucked us up round here. Government acting like it's bad luck down here. All I know is that you better bring some trucks round here. Wonder why I got my middle finger up round here. People lives on the line, you declining to help. Since you taking so much time, we surviving ourselves. Just me and my pets and my kids and my spouse. Trapped in my own house looking for a way out.
Tell them that we need to get out of here.
5 days in this motherfucking attic. Can't use the cell phone, I keep getting static. Dying cause they lying instead of telling us the truth. Other day the helicopters got my neighbors off the roof. It's cool cause they said they coming back for us too. That was 3 days ago, I don't see no rescue. See a man's gotta do what a man's gotta do. Since God made the path, then I'm trying to walk through. What? Swam to the store trying to look for food. Corner store's kinda flooded, so I broke my way through. I got what I could, but before I got through, the news said police shot a black man trying to leave. Don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, somehow Canadians are sanguine with refugee families being bombed daily in their tents. Somehow we're okay with the children of those families after traveling miles through an apocalyptic landscape of the dead, being picked off by army snipers while queuing for promised food relief packages. At least you'd think those are our Canadian values, listening to the country's new Prime Minister, Mark Carney. Nearing 2 years of a genocide waged against Palestine civil society, Mark and his minions still support those doing the killing. But to be fair, so do nearly all the parties to the People's House. Eve Engler hopes to change that. The crusading journalist, author, and activist is now standing for the vacant leadership of the NDP, that party whose abandonment of its leftist roots and the principled tenets of its membership led to ruin in the last election, seeing not only its leader fail to win his seat, but a decimation so complete the party no longer enjoys party status in Parliament. Welcome back to the program, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
Always my pleasure, of course. Now, Eve, along with abrogating Canada's moral duty to Palestine and contravening international law in its continuing support of Israel, this government is too promising to meet American demands we raise military spending to 5% of the nation's GDP, and hinting Canadian forces could, may, or will be sent into the Ukraine war theater. But firstly, Eve, what is the Eve Engler-led NDP position on Palestine?
Well, first of all, we are, you know, it's a live stream Holocaust that we have been witnessing for nearly 2 years. And 23 months into this live stream Holocaust, the Carney government is refusing to even uphold Canadian law vis-a-vis Israel. They continue to treat Israel as a unique, special case. Country gets unique status. Now, when I talk about upholding Canadian law, what I'm talking about is Canada enforcing the Foreign Enlistment Act with regards to individuals and institutions inducing Canadians to join the Israeli military, talking about enforcing the War Crimes and Crimes Against Humanity Act for Canadians who've been fighting in Gaza. I'm talking about enforcing the provisions in the Export-Import Act that say that it's contrary to Canadian law to sell weapons to countries violating human rights, which of course Israel is doing. I'm talking about implying Canada Revenue Agency rules with regards to charities subsidized by all Canadian taxpayers that are supporting the Israeli military, that are supporting West Bank settlements, that are supporting municipalities and racist organizations in Israel. All of that is currently contrary to CRA rules with regards to registered charities. We have towards upwards of $500 million raised annually by some 300 registered charities for projects in Israel. Many of those go to, like the recent example, Justice Advocates put out on Israel's military hospital where they treat Israeli soldiers. There's a Canadian Friends of that hospital that's raised about $30 million for that hospital. There's things like the Hesek Foundation that's raised about $200 million over the past 20 years for an organization set up by Heather Reisman, Jerry Schwartz, that assists non-Israelis joining the Israeli military. So this is completely unique. There's no other example of a country that has a GDP equal to Canada's, where we are sending $500 million, you know, to France or to Sweden or to Japan, different projects supporting organizations. And a whole bunch of these, dozens of these organizations violate current CRA rules. So in our 10-point plan, our leaflet that's been handing out to at Palestine Solidarity demonstrations, we list those issues, but we also list the question of the special envoy. That's basically a publicly subsidized position set up by Erwin Kotler 5 years ago to promote Israel's apartheid and now to promote its Holocaust in Gaza. We have the bubble zones. We have the IHRA anti-Palestinian definition of anti-Semitism. We have the Operation Proteus, where Canada is training a Palestinian security force, hundreds of millions of dollars in aid money over the past 20 years, to building up a Palestinian security force to oversee the occupation in the West Bank. We have the anti-Palestinian terrorism list, where 9 Palestinian organizations are listed, including groups like anti-colonial groups, secular groups like the Popular Front for Liberation of Palestine. And 10 months ago, the Carney or the Trudeau government put on the Samidun Palestinian Political Prisoners Network, a Vancouver-based grassroots organization opposing genocide, opposing over 10,000 Palestinians in kidnapped by Israel, put in its dungeons. They put that group on the terrorism list without any claims they're involved in any violence. And now we have a situation where Carney is talking about making it illegal for Canadians to have symbols of groups that are listed as terrorist organizations. So if I was to have a shirt that said Samidun Palestinian Political Prisoners Network, theoretically you could be thrown in jail, like we're seeing happening in the UK with Palestine Action. So this is where we've gone 23 months in. So if Canada just treated Israel as it was a traditional right-wing US ally, so for instance, like Colombia, Canada treated Israel like Colombia, which has been a U.S. ally in South America, it would be a big step towards ending Canadian complicity in genocide. So it's about highlighting how unique this work towards Israel is. That's what our campaign has focused on. We have this Palestine outreach strategy, which is designed to get people to support our campaign, but also to deepen consciousness of Canada's complicity in genocide. And a lot of people still don't know. They don't know the laws. They don't know the fact that we're failing to uphold our 23 months into this live stream Holocaust, we're failing to uphold our own laws, not international law, that of course as well, but our own laws on Palestine. So that's how we're focusing our criticism of ending the terrorism list, ending the apartheid charities, ending Operation Proteus, ending the bubble zones, ending the IHRA definition, ending the arms, two-way arms trade, ending a series of other points that are on the 10-point list.
Well, and of course, Colombia's current president, Gustavo Petro, has taken Colombia in a much different direction and has severed arms dealing, arms trading between both imports and exports between his country and Israel, that they were stalwart friends for many years. This, as Colombia comes out of the three-generation-long dirty war against its own people. So we applaud it where they're deserved. And when you talk about international law, Eve, you've posted up Davida Mastracci. He writes about the lone soldiers inducted or invited into the IDF to commit war crimes. What about, Eve, Canadians returning from Gaza? What about their status and investigation into the activities they got up to while over there?
Yeah, they should be investigated under the War Crimes and Crimes Against Humanity Act. I raised that point in my statement launching the campaign, Prosecute Canadians Who've Been Fighting in Gaza. We've raised it in our leafleting strategy, and I criticized Heather McPherson for failing to raise that question. And in a few days ago, Heather McPherson, the NDP Foreign Affairs Critic for the past 3 years, who's been, as I put it, vocally tepid on her criticism of Canada's support for genocide. She came out finally on that issue of prosecuting Canadians who've been committing war crimes in Gaza. So we feel that we have already impacted the discussion within the NDP, not just on this question, on some other questions as well, but specifically on the notion of prosecuting Canadians who've been fighting in Gaza. So that's definitely something that has to happen. The RCMP opened what was referred to as a structural investigation. But the War Crimes and Crimes Against Humanity Act is pretty clear that there needs to be the RCMP can begin an investigation, but it needs an okay from the minister. So it is ultimately a political decision to allow the RCMP to basically pursue Canadians who've been directly involved in the Holocaust in Gaza. And as you mentioned, Davide Mestrice he set up the website Find My IDF Soldier, where he lists, I think it's about 165 or something like that. I think there's been two versions. I think there's an updated version coming that will boost that number. But 165 Canadians who've been fighting in the Israeli military over the years. We know there's many Canadians fighting in the IOF. When I talk about like stopping treating Israel as this unique country, this special, unprecedented treatment, what I'm talking about is Deborah Lyons, who was Canada's ambassador in Israel in 2020, who then becomes the special envoy to promote apartheid and Israel's livestream Holocaust, getting public money to promote that. I mean, the official position name was special envoy to combat anti-Semitism and promote Holocaust research. But in fact, it was about promoting apartheid and genocide. And Deborah Lyons, who just stepped down 2 months ago, 6 weeks ago, when she was Canada's ambassador, appointed by the Trudeau government, she hosted a pizza party for Canadians fighting in the Israeli military. And I believe there were 78, this is in January 2020, 78 Canadians who went to the embassy and partook in this in their Israeli military uniform. So here you have the Canadian embassy hosting. I mean, in the history of Canadian foreign policy, I'm not sure I've ever come across a Canadian embassy hosting a party for Canadians fighting in another country's military, let alone a country that was involved in a 50-year illegal occupation, let alone a country that had repeedly attacked, killed 10,000 or so in Gaza in the previous handful of years. So this is completely unique. There is no precedent in Canadian foreign policy history that I'm familiar with on this support for Israel, and it has to stop. And one of the ways to stop it is to announce publicly that we're going to be applying our currently existing laws on Canadians who've been fighting in Gaza, but also on institution and individuals who are inducing, that's the word used in the Foreign Enlistment Act, inducement, Canadians to fight in the Israeli military. That, I guarantee you, public announcement, let alone a proper full investigation, let alone, you know, jailing some of the Canadians who've been committing war crimes in Gaza, just the public announcement by government officials that we're applying the War Crimes Against Humanity Act and the Foreign Enlistment Act, just that would significantly cut the number of Canadians joining the Israeli military. And we have to point out that the Israeli military just announced about 10 days ago that because of the toll that the killing in Gaza has placed on the Israeli military, they need another 60,000 troops. And they are searching out, I think it was 12,000 was the number. This is Israeli Army radio. They were searching out 12,000 non-Israelis, Jewish, North Americans, French, to join the Israeli military. So they are recruiting, openly recruiting, they cited the US and France in the article, but that would include Canada. They are openly recruiting. We have to stop that. There is a school in Toronto where a quarter of graduates, private school, where a quarter of graduates reportedly go off to the Israeli military. This has to be investigated, has to be pushed back on. And I, you know, I've been raising these issues for many, many years. My campaign is raising these issues. And we've already had, I think, some small breakthroughs in changing the terrain on these questions.
Well, and there was the precedent, of course, with the Foreign Enlistments Act being used against those Canadians that went to fight Franco in the way back. That's why it was drafted in the first place. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Eve Engler. Eve, as we're talking about, is running for the NDP's vacant leadership seat. He's been on this program many times before. You can find his writing at eveengler.com. He's the author of more than a dozen books on Canadian foreign policy. Eve, you've got an article up at eveengler.com right now. The media does its best to shape leadership race. Don't let it. Where you talk about the, well, at least the Toronto Star is an example and a good one. I would think it's the traditionally left-leaning paper, although that changed some years ago. And they're framing it, according to you, as a Heather versus Abby race that doesn't have any mention of anybody named Eve that I can see, at least not in the first 14 paragraphs. Do you want to explain who the Heather and Abby are in this uneasy triangle?
Yeah, so a week ago, the Toronto Star did a front page piece. It was supposed to be sort of like a scoop, who's going to be running for the NDP leadership. And the race formally began on September 2nd. There was a nomination package for candidates that was made available, supposed to be made available on August 20th. The party, I emailed for the package early on the 20th, and they didn't send it to me till the 25th, which had some impact on how that Toronto Star article was framed. And basically, Avi versus Heather is how the Toronto Star is framing the race. Avi Lewis, Heather McPherson. Heather McPherson's been the foreign affairs critic for the past 3 years, MP in Edmonton, and Avi Lewis is a filmmaker. He's would be viewed as more to the left of the establishment in the party. On paragraph 15 of the article, they mentioned that I was running on an anti-militarist and anti-capitalist platform, and they framed the whole thing as between Avi and Heather. But our campaign has nearly towards 1,000 volunteers. Our campaign has gotten the 1,000, just a shade under 1,000 of the NDP members to endorse our nomination. You have to get 500, and so we've doubled the nomination signatures, which is step one of participating in the race. But yeah, so basically, the Toronto Star excluded us from the discussion, and that's clearly what the NDP party brass want. They didn't give us the nomination package for 5 days, which undercut our ability to immediately start signing up people to endorse the campaign. Within 3 days of doing so, we had already surpassed the 500 threshold. So if they would have sent us the package on August 20th, as they were supposed to, we would have already by the Monday, we would have had the signatures. And the Toronto Star actually did reach out to our campaign manager, co-campaign manager, to ask the state of the campaign. And if we would have got the package on the proper date, we would have been able to tell him, we would have actually probably already sent out a press release announcing that we'd surpassed the threshold. So what was basically big picture, what we're seeing here is that obviously we know that the Toronto Star and the dominant media is hostile to our anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist, pro-decolonization, pro-degrowth, pro-economic democracy platform. We know that. But we also seeing that the NDP brass are playing the little games to undermine our campaign. There's a whole series of other examples of this as well. And so it ends up being that by postponing our ability to sign up nomination signatures, that then makes it more easy for the Toronto Star to basically bury us in this front page story about the NDP leadership race. So it's a small part of this bias against, obviously, ideas that challenge power. It's not a surprise. It's always annoying when you have to engage with them. But we're building this campaign. I just did. We were at Labor Day, big Labor Day in Toronto. There's tens of thousands of people there. We handed out more than 2,000 leaflets. There was about a dozen, 15 volunteers on the leadership campaign that were there. There was tons of support. I walked in the NDP contingent. Heather McPherson I introduced myself to her, and she just like turned away with a look on her face that was priceless. It was a mix of disdain and and hostility that was absolutely remarkable. And two of people on my campaign saw it. We got a photo. Did it later on, again, 30 minutes later. I tried to say hi to her again 30 minutes later. And this look of just continuing on, refusing to. So but I already can tell that she's rattled. We're in this for a substantive political debate, discussion about the direction of Canada's domestic and foreign policy. I have absolutely no doubt that Heather McPherson specifically, and maybe to a lesser extent, Abby Lewis, but Heather McPherson is not, she's in it to go and take photos. She goes, shows up, you saw it very clearly. She's there at the start of the Labor Day parade, takes photos with people in the NDP contingent, runs around to a few different other union contingents, takes photos, and then departs and went off to the Hamilton Labor Day rally, which was taking place at the same time. So she quickly drives over to Hamilton to do the same thing. There's no substance. We were there the full day. I then did, or the night before, did a 2 hour plus talk in Toronto. Then did one in Hamilton later that night. Then did one in St. Catharines the next afternoon. Then did later that night in London, Ontario. This is substance. We're putting forward substantive ideas. Heather McPherson is into taking photo ops and having basically herself the establishment candidate and become sort of coronated as the next leader, and continue on with the same old of slight social democracy, more or less alignment with the Canadian foreign policy, alignment with the U.S. empire. That's not what we're doing. We're challenging on substance, on shutting down the tar sands, on turning the real estate investment trusts, the corporate landowners, into cooperatives. We're raising the notion of economic democracy and how we have to challenge capitalism. But it's, the deck is stacked against us, but we are organizing. We're going to be coming out west. We're doing a follow-up tour, a big launch in Toronto on September 18th, Kitchener, then the Ontario NDP convention. Then we're going to be out west in Vancouver, on Vancouver Island, for 4 or 5 events. And then we have a series of other events planned. So, yeah, we're bringing substance. They don't like it. They're going to try every different trick to undercut our campaign, and we're going to keep challenging the power both within the NDP and more generally within Canadian society.
Well, you can be sure that the old political pro Heather is not going to show that game face that you saw to the press. The Toronto Star, though, I think maybe a little more forgiving than I would be, because as I understand, neither Heather nor Abby has declared, but they were still devoting all these article column inches to them. They could have done the same to you or broken it up. When you say that you passed the threshold, I know that there's a second element to that, as well as the numbers, and it's the regional age equity criteria of which members you get signed up. Have you transcended that as well?
Yeah, we have now transcended all of the criteria. Which is the most difficult one for us, was the 50 under 26 NDP members. We just hit the 50 threshold. We're going to move beyond that. We're just a shade under 1,000, 975, I think, is the last number I heard. Signatures, we're going to have to move. We want to be beyond at least 10 or more beyond each of the different equity, regional, and age criteria. And we've hit all of their criteria, but we want to go beyond that. So we're still asking people to sign, so they can't find, okay, maybe two people they'll claim that are not under 26 or something like that endorsed. So we have hit all of the criteria. I'm pretty confident that none of the other candidates have done that. And as you point out, the Toronto Star, our campaign's further along. The other part is we have to have $25,000 is the first installment for participating in the race, as well as a $1,500 vetting fee. So we have some pledges, and we're going to get those pledges into the bank account, and then we're going to start publicly fundraising. And we're confident that we can get the $25,000 first installment, and then we're going to put it into the NDP's court. And we're going to, show them our signatures, put up the cash, and we're going to fulfill the vetting. And then it's going to be up to them if they decide that they're going to try to, they're going to allow members to decide, or if they're going to just block democracy before it can happen. And so we understand that they are likely, they want to block members from being able to decide. We're trying to build an organizational structure, a consciousness of our campaign, a number of volunteers, a number of signatures, a number of, you know, financial, to make it difficult for them to just block internal democracy.
Well, and of course, it's members only that get to partake in this aspect of the race. You need to have members supporting you. People can join the NDP. It's not hard to do. Look it up. NDP.ca is their site. Eve's site is eveangler.com. I'm looking at your Eve's bid to lead the NDP. You can go to Eve's site and find out more information about how you can become a member, how you can contribute to Eve's campaign and get to know more about the issues at hand as well. We've only got like a minute left, Eve. David Eby, a day after Labor Day, kind of gave the finger to the BCGEU, the Government Employees Union here in British Columbia. You're going to be out here. Reiterate, please, when you're going to be in BC and what's your response to Mr. Eby or Premier Eby's position on the BCGEU?
Yeah, we put out a action alert to support the union in its strike. We have one of our main activists who is in the BCGEU who is on strike. And so we are demonstrating as a campaign that we're not just going to go along with the, you know, NDP establishment just because they decide that they want to ignore the fact that housing costs are drastically increasing in Victoria and other places where they're, you know, the BCGEU members have to pay. Obviously, wages need to rise in alignment with cost of living. And that is what this strike's about. And we are supporting the union, and we're mobilizing people for this. This is what the difference in the campaign is that we're trying to turn this is an activist party, a mobilizing force. And as part of that, we're going to be in Vancouver starting on the 21st of September, then over on the island on the 22nd and 23rd, back in Vancouver on the 24th, and then maybe back on the island on the 25th. We still have some logistical questions. And we'll be doing multiple events in Victoria, in Nanaimo, Cowichan, etc.
Well, that's coming up. It sounds exciting. The most excitement I've had since maybe Dimitri was running for the Green Party. Maybe even more so than that. Eve, I wish you all the best, and I can hear that you've been out there with your megaphone. So I want to thank Greg Palast for coming on, and remind everyone, go to his website, gregpalast.com, to find his work, his documentary films, and his written work, and his books as well. The guy's brilliant. Thanks a lot, Eve, for coming on again, eh?
Thanks for having me.
At the end of the fifth, he's walking in like, hey, chilling on his vacation, sitting patiently. Them black folks gotta hope, gotta wait and see if FEMA really comes through in an emergency. But nobody seems to have a sense of urgency. Now the mayor's been reduced to crying, and guess Bush said niggas been used to dying. He said, I know it looks bad, just have to wait. Forgetting folks were too broke to evacuate. Niggas starving and they dying of thirst. I bet he had to go and check on them refineries first. Making a killing off the price of gas. He would have been up in Connecticut twice as fast. After all that we've been through, nothing's changed. You can call Red Cross, but the fact remains that George Bush ain't a gold digger. But he ain't fucking with no broke niggas. George Bush ain't a gold digger. But he ain't fucking with no broke niggas. Come down, Bush, come on, come down. 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 George Bush ain't a gold digger. Don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people. Come down, George, come on, come down. Come down, George, come on, come down.